Chapter 12. Mark said, "I made a list." He was showered and shaved, and everything smelled relatively fresh in the apartment, which it didn't always, especially when Mark was struggling with something. So this was a good sign. "We're in business," Mark announced. "Otherwise, I wouldn't have had you come." "Gee," Chris said. "Great news, I think. But you wouldn't have had me come anyway? I mean, I owe you regardless." "I would have had you send a check then. I have my pride, don't forget." Chris said he understood, and Mark opened a folder, and there was a left and right page clipped to the inside. Pretty organized, actually, and there were a bunch of names on the left sheet and none on the right, only the heading there, Chris's family tree. "This is weird," Chris said. "You got family tree on the blank one, and the one with the names, you got nothing up top." "Stop nitpicking," Mark said. "See what you think." And there were about 15 names on that left sheet with other information attached. Chris said, "I feel like I'm in the Twilight Zone here. I'm assuming these folks are all related to me?" "Fifth cousins and better," Mark said proudly. "Keep in mind, we're talking nearly a million genetic markers in play with the autosomal technology." "Oh, as compared to the old method. Still in play in most police crime labs where they're limited to about 12. Chris thought he understood the concept originally and didn't want to get confused with extra information, but now he might be. "If you could cut me to the chase," he said. "Fine. I hacked him out." "That's what the right sheet represents. Meaning, I have no family members left in the GEDmatch database, you're saying?" "Holy Toledo. That's a miracle." And he felt like hugging Mark or something, but he stopped short. But man, all that worry, since at least Eclipse, Arizona, actually probably way before that. "Well, I'm glad you're satisfied," Mark said. "That's my reward." "What it was," Chris said, "I was reading all these articles, how they captured the Golden State Killer, and I was blown away like any doofus true crime buff from the cheap seats." "Until it dawned on you they might apply to your direction," Mark said. "Yeah," Chris said, "a wake-up call for sure. I don't know what to say, man. I can start living like a normal fellow again." "I hear you," Mark said. "Of course, the way I'm following it, they're going after the cold stuff first, putting the resources in the major ones that have been stewing on their plate." "Frustrating them," Chris said. "That's what I was kind of thinking too, but you can't be too safe." "That's for sure," Mark said, and Chris didn't mention the most recent article he'd read. No point throwing that in. "But where some police figure is telling you exactly the opposite, that they are starting to apply the technology to the newer cases." "So what do we got?" Chris said, picking up the folder and scrutinizing that left column. "I'm stating the obvious," Mark said, "but this is only a fraction of your complete family tree. But these are the ones that count, who are curious enough to do the Ancestry.com and 23andMe thing." "So just so I have it straight, one more time," Chris said, "if someone, like law enforcement, happened to run across some DNA and they didn't know whose it was and they wanted to find out, so they run it through just like you did, and for whatever hypothetical reason the DNA happens to be mine, bottom line, they won't be able to figure that out now, right?" "You're a little long-winded there," Mark said, "but correct. They get the right sheet. That's it. They get stuffed, like in basketball. I had on the Celtics-Pacers first-round playoff. A guy drives a lane, goes up for the dunk. Some other guy comes flying out of nowhere and blocks it. It's normally the surest play in sports, and the dude comes away stuffed. The guy stuffed a dunk." "Okay, take it easy," Chris said. "Whatever. My deal, there's still technically a family tree in there, right? But the cops are such, they don't see it. Because none of those people remaining, they didn't submit any DNA. So there's nothing left for mine to match to." Correct. In fact, you got a big old family tree. Were you aware of that? Chris said he wasn't. In the left column of those offenders who had submitted their DNA, and you had to take Mark's word for it, that these were the only ones you had to worry about. And it read, Justin Hagersham, 49, Twin Falls, Idaho. Wilson Preston Tuckenbath, 64, Meridian Plains, Wisconsin. Elizabeth B. Watson Sistrunk, 29, Bath, Maine. Henning Veriface, 70, Dahlonega, Georgia. Bryce Waller, 43, Redding, California. Hargrove Dexter Siegenfuss, 78, Aberdeen, South Dakota. Cora Ellen Macon, 36, Nauvoo, Illinois. Richard R. Gentry, 22, Winthrop, Washington. Jeffrey R. Tuckenbath, 61, Cedar Key, Florida. Patrice Susan Watson, 34, Van Buren, Maine. Grayson Robert Lauerplan, 55, Silver City, New Mexico. Rose Archer Remington, 38, Boone, North Carolina. Monrose F. Veriface, 72, Rancho Mirage, California. Francis P. R. Ferguson, 84, Iowa City, Iowa. Michael Justice, 68, Pensacola, Florida. And Patricia J. C. Syndergaard, 29, Wheeling, West Virginia. Quite a list. The final three, of course, with more information added this time, were the names Mark had run by Chris over the phone when he was in the middle of battling the hack. But a dozen others now, too, none of which he recognized. Geez, Chris said, not to challenge you or anything, but are you sure these folks are connected to me? Bud, Mark said, one thing you don't want to do is insult my intelligence. Chris understood, at least intellectually, that when Mark had uploaded his profile into GEDmatch and hit search, and then the machine had done its thing and spewed out the matches, that these 15 folks were scientifically linked to him specifically, as opposed to anyone else in the database of a million other people, even remotely, was how he understood it. But still, didn't mean to insult anyone, Chris said. Wouldn't you expect at least one Seeley in there, though? Or even my mom's maiden name, Weeding? It's a crapshoot, Mark said. These are the ones. Like you put it to me one time, they happen to watch late-night TV, the heritage sites being advertised, and they forked over the dough and went for it. I am thinking, Chris said, the one name Macon in there, I might have heard it somewhere, our family. Good, Mark said. Also, Lauerplan, Chris said. The guy in New Mexico, that might have been Graham's side of the family, a couple steps removed, that name. Just goes to show I should have been more up on this shit. Mark said, interesting that most of the folks on your list, they live in small towns. I was thinking that too. The other thing, the Bryce Waller up in Redding, that geez, the guy's my exact age. You're wondering, Mark said, should you look him up? Introduce yourself to your long-lost fourth cousin. Yeah, Chris said, but couldn't that set off a can of worms? Meaning, the guy asks how I found him, and I say through the genealogy site, and he gets excited and goes back in there to see what other unknown relatives he might look up, except he notices he's not in there anymore. So then he straightens it out, does the DNA test again, reinserts himself. Yeah, good point, Mark said. Don't look him up. They shot the breeze a little more, and Mark gave Chris a couple dog biscuits to feed to Mel, and Mark said, you brought up something kind of obvious there, and honestly, I didn't think of that. Don't sweat it. You were wrapped up in a significantly bigger task. But, Mark said, the workaround is, you run these names periodically, the list. All you have to do is make a fake account and you can search the database. Anyone can. It's public. Unlikely the scenario with your Redding cousin is going to happen, where someone starts all over again with a $99 late night TV DNA test, but if you ever see it happen, let me know. Fine, sounds good, thanks again. You could see Mark wasn't quite good with this, though, and he was massaging it, and after a couple minutes he said, you know what, don't you worry about it, how we'll handle it. I'll go back in there and code an alert to myself. So if that ever did happen, anyone of this group ever re-entering themselves, I will get an immediate notification. Wow. So visit the guy in Reading after all, you're saying? Let's not go that far if we don't have to, but yes, we'd have it covered. Chris took a moment. What I like about you, he said, you take on your clients' problems like they're weighing on you just as bad. That's an admirable quality. And I'll sleep a lot better. Well, we both will, Mark said, and they wrapped it up, and Chris wondered how far he could make it tonight, meaning the direction of New York again, and you'd see how that played out. But it was sure nice to have some peace of mind for a change. The business he'd been talking about recently was someone or other. Oh yeah, it was Ned. Speak of the devil. But that they had to take a couple seconds every day and be thankful for the mostly idyllic Manhattan Beach weather. That was playing out real true on this particular cross-country trek. First of all, the Sierras were rough right off the bat, and they told him at his regular Starbucks in Colfax that 80 was screwed up, and there were chains required at the moment from Baxter, which was 10 miles from here, to Boca, which was beyond Truckee. And Chris hated this process, and man, this was April 13th already. Shouldn't we be discussing wildflowers and hiking trails by now? But apparently not this year, and one of the girls at the counter said her brother could help him, and she called the guy and asked Chris what make and model his vehicle was, and she got back to the brother, and the kid showed up promptly and had the right chains with him and took care of it, and Chris threw the kid an extra 20 over what he charged him. Well worth it to be sipping your Americana while the kid did the dirty work in the parking lot. You thought of these things too late, but there had been a Subaru in the used lot on Sepulveda, and Chris ignored it, even though the salesman did mention the convenience to Tahoe business. But what could you do now, and you handled it, so forget it. Except that it wasn't quite so easy. There were more spots, eastern Nevada, little bluffs basically, is all they felt like, but quite unfortunately, they required change to get up and down those as well. And Chris ended up exactly where he didn't want to be, which was on his back, side of the road, trying to figure how to fit the damn things on and then remove them. Not once, but twice, the whole shebang. And what was up with this? Something he wasn't aware of even in the high snow season. You needed change or four-wheel drive on this part of Highway 80, for God's sakes? And maybe the doomsdayers really were right about global warming, messing with the cold stuff too. Then 3 days of rain. Again, not your spring showers variety, but hammering, thunderous stuff. The defrost on full blast, and your eyes riveted to what little you could sometimes see of the road. And Utah, Wyoming, and Nebraska were pretty forgettable this time. And it wasn't until Des Moines that it dried out, and then you had the reverse. It got hot, and that first night after the rain ended, little pull-off town called Casey, Chris took a walk for a little night air, and the mosquitoes or black flies or whatever the heck ate the shit out of him. He was finally able to duck back into the motel room for a little relief, and there was air conditioning, but it was making an inordinate amount of noise, and this was Tuesday night, and with the time change, you wouldn't be disturbing anyone out west. And Chris shut off the AC and opened the windows and called Finch. While it was ringing, he noticed one of the screens was screwed up, and he could picture a perfect storm of bugs, figuring it out pretty quick, but how much more damage could they do already? I'm glad you called, Finch said. We missed you. This was the point here. Chris felt a little funky, too, having to miss the Friday night session. How was the assorted student writing this time? Chris said. It was unusual once again, including your piece, Finch said. So you're telling me, Chris said, trying to remember it. You didn't like the guy having to save the tour guide from Canada? I thought that part worked okay. Resolved a couple of things at least, but left the door open for a sequel. I beg your pardon, Finch said, and Chris realized that was his first idea. But he didn't care for it too much, never wrote it down, and what he turned in was something different. I'm mixed up, maybe, Chris said. Who read mine? Holly. In fact, she packaged the evening together for you. She made copies of everything. It would be a shame if you dropped out, Chris. I feel some momentum kicking in. Who said anything about dropping out? Ned alluded to it, Finch said. He said you had to visit your aunt in Boca Raton, that it could take a few weeks, and that you'd in fact mentioned that if it agrees with you there, you might just stay. Chris said. All true, I guess, but my guess is visiting aunts is overrated. Listen, maybe I'll give Holly a quick call. Splendid, Finch said. She can forward you the next assignment as well. What's the scoop there, anyhow? The phantom yacht broker guy. You're nosy, Finch said. I really am. I'm a fan of Clarity. Finch said, I've been curious myself, so I asked her. Wow. Not so much as a friendly inquiry as calling her bluff. Did it work? Well, she did produce a gentleman, brought him to the session. You're kidding. And? He's a perfectly nice chap, but they're a mismatch if they actually are an item. Chris said, you're worse than me with the obnoxious opinions. How would you know? First of all, he loved her piece. He defended it against even the mildest pushback from Rosie and Ned and myself. Strictly between you and I, her piece was atrocious. Ah, you're saying, though, he may not be floating her boat. Why don't you step in and make a move? I'm considering it, Finch said, a real one. Chris was kidding, but this was amusing. Let the old guy go for it. They said goodnight, and Chris called Holly. Hey there, she said. Not your fault, he said, but of all the current expressions out of the millennials' mouths, that one hits the biggest nerve. Well, someone's on their high horse, apparently, she said. Let's start over, Chris said. Anything going on with you and Finch? Not the question he intended to ask, but it slid out. I love Terry, you know that. So yes, there hopefully always will be. Chris let it go, don't stir up more trouble, and he said, he did say you had a recap from Friday night. Yes, where are you? What did that have to do with anything, Chris was thinking, but you'd better keep in line with Ned's Florida explanation and the route you'd therefore be taking. So Chris said, Roussette, Louisiana. Why? No idea, of course, if this was a real town anywhere in the country, but hopefully it did the trick. Because your piece this week, she said, it needs more color. Chris, when you visit these places, you have to look around. That's what shapes good writing. Observation, then, he said. Precisely. You have the two men speaking in the bar in Venice, and that's fine. But how can you expect the reader to connect the ski lift accident in Colorado? It didn't work, Chris said. Chris, it was laughable. I mean, I'm sorry to inject the tough love on you, but everyone was in agreement. Okay, then. Maybe I'll have to rework it. Whose was the best? I've made copies for you. You can judge. That's okay. For now, just give me the bottom line. Well, one by one, she said, Rosie's was interesting. She had Carrie riding in a float down 6th Avenue, the Puerto Rico Day Parade, and there's someone in the parade throwing candy to the children in the crowd, and Carrie notices a mini pack of Pop-Tarts on the ground unaccounted for, and she climbs down off the float and retrieves it, and when she tries to get back on, the float runs over her foot. Humph, Chris said, working in the symbolism then. What are you talking about? Forget that. Who went next? Ned did. His character is on a hippie bus. Don't forget it's 1968. Everyone's getting high, and the character suggests stopping by a lake, and they all skinny dip, except the character who gets a call and sits by a tree and takes it. There's quite a bit more, too. Ned applied himself vigorously this week. Chris said, they had cell phones in 1968? They did not, and Rosie mentioned it right away, but I told Ned he could simply be interlacing dimensions, that it's all about the story, and time and place is largely irrelevant. I see, Chris said. Ned okay with that explanation? Not in the least. He seemed pretty pissed off. He said he was going to have to rewrite the whole scene. And your work? Chris said. Well, do you have a couple minutes? I feel like this workshop is paying off, that I'm beginning to find my rhythm. You better give me the abridged version. For now, I mean. Okay. Eleanor fends off the advances of Claire's husband. She returns to the cabin. She takes a shower. Claire comes in carrying an Entenmann's pound cake, and they crack it open. Chris waited in case there was more, but there wasn't. Well, that sounds decent, he said, and the main thing, you're leaving the door open for the next one. Chris, you keep going there, but what if there isn't a next one? Our work needs to stand on their own. How'd everyone react, he said, to yours? Oh, they loved it. Chris, this is what I'm saying. We're feeding off each other. The energy is quite special. There's a next assignment then, he said. You bet. Write the scene that takes place immediately after your inciting incident. Well, Chris said, I'll do my best. I have to look up inciting incident first. I'll email you a definition, she said, with examples. You can tell I'm fired up. Finch is amazing. He is. He also mentioned you brought your friend. Ed. Yes, I did. That veered slightly south, actually. Oh? Yes, on the way home, he expressed an odd, and in my mind, a destructive view, that the whole evening was total garbage and a waste of time. Chris said, is Ed like a frustrated writer himself, that he's not admitting to? Chris, I'm so glad to hear you say that. The thought occurred to me as well. So you can dump him and move on. You're not on the same wavelength, clearly. Again, meant as nothing more than sticking in the needle for a little fun, but Holly said, you know something? That's an excellent point. That may have been the final straw. I'm not kidding. Another example, Chris was thinking, how things can turn on a dime.